He's a trendy hip story gamer with a vastly successful podcasting network. He's a crotchety old grognard trad gamer with a handful of listeners and a noisy cat. Together, they are the pod couple. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends of the OSR. I'm your host, Jason Hobbs, and today, I guess we're not Hobbs and Friends of the OSR. We're actually the pod couple because I have a very trendy hip dude, very known in the podcasting world, Jason Cordova. How's it going, Jason?
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me on. The pod couple is super interesting. I was actually thinking what would be better is Hobbsy and JC, like Cagney and Lacey.
Oh, nice.
You're good, huh? I just thought of that. So it might need a little work, to be fair.
I don't know how old you are, but did you ever watch The Odd Couple? Or
I did not. No, no. I mean, I know what it is, obviously, but I know I've never seen it. So,
you know, I polled my big fan base about what they thought about it, which means a couple of people on Hangout, and some of them were like, you know, no, most people aren't going to know what the hell The Odd Couple is. That's stupid. I mean, I'm like, but hey, it's funny to me, and that's all that matters.
Jack Lemmon was in it, right?
Jack Langland.
Oh.
I think he was the guy that played like a Quincy Adams. He played like a doctor much later.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the TV show Odd Couple. I was thinking of that. There's a movie as well, right? An old movie. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. It was Jack Lemmon on the movie. Yes. And I don't know if I've ever seen the movie. I'm talking about the TV show.
In the movie version, am I Jack Lemmon? That's all I want to know.
I don't know which. Well, you can be whoever you want, man. I don't care. I actually kind of thought you were Felix Unger, though, and I was the messy guy. So I don't know.
I'll take it. Yeah, we'll settle for that.
all right. So if any of you guys don't really know who Jason Cordova is, I would be surprised. But I mean, we're kind of in different spectrums, right? Which bit, we may talk about later, I guess. But he is, I guess I don't even know. Why don't you talk about the Gauntlet, what it is, and then we'll just go from there.
Yeah, sure. So I am the organizer, the principal organizer, at least, of a gaming community called the Gauntlet. That gaming community constitutes several sort of like big features, I guess. We have a podcast network. I'm a host of several of the shows on the podcast network. We have an annual gaming convention, an online gaming convention called Gauntlet Con, which we were excited to have you at last year as a guest, Jason.
Thanks, man.
We publish the Codex magazine every month. And then the sort of crown jewel of the Gauntlet is Gauntlet Hangouts, which is our great big online gaming calendar. We have, I think, as of I counted today, we are averaging about 125 game sessions per month on Gauntlet Hangouts. So, yeah, a really big, vibrant little online gaming scene.
That's awesome.
The reason why you may not know who I am is because our focus tends to be kind of like on indie games and story games. But lately we have been doing a lot more what we call tridindle games. basically anything published by Modiphius. and also some OSR stuff too. So.
Trigdignal? How do you spell that? What is that, like off the tri-stat or?
We haven't settled on a precise portmanteau yet, but I like Tridindle, which is a combination of traditional and indie.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, that's cool. I don't know about the pronunciation, but I like it on paper. All right, so you put some of the other shows that are on your network. Do you want to mention those at all? Or
yeah, sure. The shows on our network are the Gauntlet Podcast. That's been around for a few years. That's our main show. It's kind of community oriented. We kind of cover a lot of the stuff that we're doing within the Gauntlet community on that podcast. We talk about a lot of the games we're playing and that kind of thing. There is Discern Realities, which is our Dungeon World discussion podcast. We have Plus One Forward. I'm not on that one, but that's the one hosted by Rich Rogers and Rach Shelgi. And it's about Powered by the Apocalypse games. We have Fear of a Black Dragon, which I think we're going to talk about today quite a bit. Pocket Size Play and We Hunt the Keepers are our two actual play podcasts. I'm on many of those. We Hunt the Keepers is a Dungeon World specific, and then Pocket Size Play is kind of a general actual play feed.
I think some of the guys, like, isn't Kev Thulu, he does some of the Pocket Size Play ones. Is that what he's on or no?
He does, yeah. Yeah, he is. Kevin is in, oh gosh. He's in our Monster Hearts actual play.
Okay.
Yeah, he's great. And I play with Kevin like probably at least three or four times a month. So, yeah, he's pretty awesome.
That's cool. He's a cool guy. So, didn't you had something called Comic AP or something? Is that just stopped being a show?
Comic Strip AP. Yeah, that was my We don't fail at much in the Gauntlet, but that was one of them. I mean, so what it was, I loved the idea of Comic Strip Papy. What it was, so in one of our other podcasts, Discern Realities, we did this thing, or when we indeed still do this thing, where myself and my co-host David, we do a little 10 to 15 minute segment of actual play after the end of, at the end of the discussion part, we do a little bit of actual play, and it's like an ongoing story. So every episode you get a little bit more of the story. We called it Comic Strip because it's so small, right? It's like little tiny bursts of story. And so we decided to take that concept and make it bigger and have a whole podcast feed where two people could get together every week and record 10 to 15 minutes of AP of a game. And they, you know, throw some music on it and edit it a little bit and then put it out there. And it was really good. The quality is insanely high. Like if you listeners, if you go back and find those old Comic Strip APs, bonkers good quality. Like it's some of the best stuff we've ever done. No listenership. That show got no traction. And I think the reason why is because at any given time, there were about like five or six different stories going on. And
hard to follow, maybe.
It was hard to follow it. Yeah, people had a hard time like kind of figuring out like where to find each episode. And so we never figured out a good solution for that. And so it just kind of never took off, sadly. But it was a great idea, though.
It sounds like a cool idea because I think that segment in your Discern Realities is actually pretty popular, right?
It is. Yeah, it's kind of one of those, you know, I mean, I think it's one of the things that we sort of innovated, right? Like I'm really proud of it. I think it's a really great feature of that show. And I'm proud of Comic Strip also. It just, you know, it ended up not being kind of worth the effort at the end of the day because it just never caught on. So it's sad, but you know.
It sounds like it would be kind of hard to organize in some, but I could see why. I mean, you never know what people are going to listen to, really. So I always say it's I have no idea why people listen to this. So
our other AP shows, Pocket Size Play and We Hunt the Keepers. We Hunt the Keepers is newer, but Pocket Size Play has been around for a while. And the quality level of that show is not nearly as high as Comic Strip AP because it, at least from a production standpoint, because it's just our hangout audio. Like it's not original. It's not like, you know, like separate audio streams, you know, it doesn't sound bad, but it's the production values are nowhere near Comic Strip was. It's vastly more popular than Comic Strip AP ever was. Like people love that way more. And so, yeah, you never kind of know, I guess.
So how many episodes of the Gauntlet do you have, do you think? I mean, you probably know, I guess, so.
In of all the podcasts in total, I guess? Is that what you're asking?
No, just because the Gauntlet is your flagship, right? It was the original one, so it's the oldest one.
I think we're probably up to about 160 episodes in total. Some of them are numbered, some of them aren't, so it's kind of hard to say with any precision, but it's about 160. Yeah.
That's pretty much what you started with in the say, the gaming industry or something, or what, is just basically doing the Gauntlet podcast, or...?
No. We actually, that's a great question. Yeah, because I could have gone into more of the history of the community. No, the Gauntlet started in Houston as a basically kind of a message board for D&D meetups.
All right, cool.
That's what it was. But it wasn't very active. Like no one was doing anything with it. And I got to Houston after having left a pretty vibrant tabletop scene in Austin. I got to Houston without having a game group to play with. And so I found this, it was a G+ community at the time, and that's all it was. And it was totally idle. There was nothing going on. And I was just like, hey, I want to play some games. I'll play whatever, you know? And so somebody replied back and his name was Kerry. He was like, hey, yeah, let's do this. Like I've got some space in my office after hours. If you want to come by, we'll play something. We ran Far Trek. That was the first game we ran. It was Far Trek, a kind of Star Trek. Sort of stripped down Star Trek thing. And it kind of went from there. And from there, we just kept gaming and kept playing. And that went on for a couple of years before we launched even the first episode of the podcast. Like we just kept building up that local scene. So.
All right. Well, that's pretty cool. I mean, your listenership is way bigger than Houston though. So, I mean, why do you think that it became that way? Maybe just from Dungeon World really, because Discern Realities, or what do you think? I mean,
we got our start. We owe a lot of our initial success to the game designer Paul Sega. Do you know Paul Sega?
I don't think so.
He's kind of an old Forgeite. I call him the elder statesman of indie games. a national treasure of role-playing based amusements, really. And he'll kill me when he hears this.
Good, I like that.
I routinely knife him in a joking way about being old and out of date. But no, he's amazing. I love Paul. He created the very a very in the story game space, a very seminal game called My Life with Master. And so he's pretty popular in with the whole Forge crowd, right? I don't know anything about the Forge crowd. I don't know them. I play a lot of those games from the Forge diaspora, but I was not doing role-playing games at that time. And so, but he heard our podcast and kind of like put us out there to people. And then that's how we kind of just started to kind of go beyond Houston, right? So.
All right. Well, that's cool. I know some of the Forge people. I didn't really get too involved with it. Maybe a lurker or something during that time, but.
My impression of it was super toxic. I mean, I might be wrong about that, but I love a lot of the ideas that came out of the Forge, but I'm glad it's gone personally.
it was kind of during that time where there was just like a lot of toxic message boards around, honestly,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Something awful. And there were just quite a few of them that were really kind of like that, but I don't know. So we're still in the introduction stage here. So I usually talk about how we know each other. And on the outline, I wrote Gauntlet Con, and I don't remember what. And then you just go, I don't think you know me. You're right. I don't know you.
Jokingly, I remember what, you know, when we had you at Gauntlet Con. I didn't get to play with you at the time. I'm really familiar with Misdirected Mark Network. I listen to Misdirected Mark and occasionally Pandas Talk Games and She's a Super Geek. And so I knew about Hobbs and Friends of the OSR from that, but I hadn't really gotten a chance to listen to it until just preparing for this show. So,
which was it's saying something pretty good that you actually listened to it to prepare for the show. You're better than most of my guests.
I listened to like three episodes. Yeah. I wanted to make sure I knew what I was getting into. Right. When you kind of pinged me and was like, hey, you want to come on the show? I was like, yeah, I'd love to. Just the fact that you're on Misdirected Mark Network was like enough of a vouch, right? So it wasn't like,
oh wow, really? That's nice.
I wasn't going to be like, oh, like, you know, like this person could be totally shady, right?
Well, it's kind of, that's an interesting, I don't think I've ever really talked a bit about this on the mics at all, how I got on Misdirected Mark Network.
That's a good question. Yeah. How did that happen?
Yeah. There's a lot of people that ask me in the OSR group, why are you on a network? Why are you doing it? Those people aren't OSR people or whatever, you know? And to me, it was at Gamehole Con, I don't know, 2 years ago, I think now, I was friends with Gaming and BS, Brett and Sean. I don't know if you know who they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And I'm buddies with those guys. And Chris was actually there. And I don't know, we hit it off and we played Dungeon World and we talked a lot. And, that was in November. And then by February, I was like, hey, I have this idea for a show. You don't really have an OSR show and there aren't really too many of them. I thought it would be cool if there was one and I would do it. You know, I know tons of people. I would get them on and we'd talk about it. It would be fun. And he's like, oh, let me ask Senda. And then we just did it. So
that's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. I love your guys' logo. I knew about your show before we launched Fear of the Black Dragon or when we were kind of, you know, kind of
looking, you were looking for an OSR show, right? I saw that, I think.
Yeah, I was. I was just shopping for one initially. I was like, hey, who wants to be our OSR show? And, but I actually, well, you know what? You know, it's kind of funny. There's a little bit of a story there. Let me just finish my point about the logo.
Yeah.
I really love your logo. I almost did, or I wanted to do that sort of like blue grid, you know, like map look with our logo until I saw yours, right?
That isn't our logo. That I got that from it's not Patrick Stewart, but it's another guy. I'd have to look it up. The OSR part, it's a Creative Commons, and I asked him, I'm gonna have a podcast, do you care if I use it? And he's like, nope, go ahead, knock yourself out. So
that's cool. Yeah. Well, I mean, just like the general aesthetic of it. I was like, oh, that's really, I was like, man, I want to do something like that. But then we went with our like our toxic green logo instead. So.
All right.
So I want to pick up what you said earlier about,
yeah,
because I was initially kind of shopping for an OSR podcast, right? I kind of was like, hey, I really want to have that kind of, I want to represent that on our network, right? And I was, you know, starting to get into a lot of different aspects of the OSR and DIY and stuff like that, and also rediscovering some things I loved as a kid. And we actually did a couple of like test episodes with some different folks and we listened to a lot of shows. Didn't get a chance to listen to yours, but we listened to a lot of shows. And ultimately I just decided like, no, I need to do the show I want to do because like, this is all great, but like, it's not what I want to do. And so, yeah, at the end of the day, we just made a decision to do like the way we wanted to do it. So we made something original.
Yeah. That's awesome. All right, let's finish this and we'll talk since I feel like we're dancing around some stuff that I put on here later. So let's get this first part done. So I usually talk about, like what I've been gaming since the last show or whatever. I'll go first since it's way smaller than yours. I had the opportunity to play test Stephen Newton's new Dungeon Crawl Classics Halloween Adventure. So it's the adventure that'll come out this year for Halloween. And it was actually pretty fun. I mean, it really has a – do you play Dungeon Crawl Classics at all? Have you ever played it or
– I have, yeah.
What do you think about it?
It's one of my preferred OSR systems for sure. I like a couple of things that it does. I think the fighter, little feats thing that the fighter can do is pretty cool. That's kind of some, I consider it to be some story game shit. I like that. And I like the general aesthetic of DCC. Like the DCC core book is probably the most beautiful book I own. Like I love that book so much. So yeah, you know, I'm into DCC.
Do you know who Stephen Newton is? Have you ever played any of his ventures or anything?
No, I do not. No, I don't know by name, I guess.
He just did Children of the Sun for, Crawling Under a Broken Moon, and he did They Served Brandolin Red, which was the Halloween Adventure a couple of years ago. So those are all his. He's a pretty affluent. I mean, he's got a bunch of others, and like normal, I didn't research a bunch of Stephen Newton stuff to blab it off at the moment, but I really appreciated having the opportunity to play test it. And I think my guys really enjoyed it. It was spooky and it was fun, kind of gory. And I would tell everyone when it comes around to buy it. What about you, Jason? What have you been playing, man?
I have been playing World of Dungeons, which is John Harper's. Well, it was originally just kind of a joke. It was like a sort of retro joke version of Dungeon World, but it's actually a really solid little system. I use it to run through OSR books just because it's a lot lighter touch than Dungeon World is, and it's really flexible. And so I played World of Dungeons in Operation Unfathomable. The setting book, or I guess kind of expanded adventure kind of thing that put out by Hydra Cooperative fairly recently. Great fun. I talked about that on our show recently. I ran a playtest of a game called Sea of Stars. That is a Powered by the Apocalypse. It's essentially Powered by the Apocalypse Star Wars, basically. It's a sort of high romance, high adventure, science fiction setting. I ran some Monster of the Week. I run a very special Monster of the Week series that is so Monster of the Week is a Powered by the Apocalypse monster hunting game. You have a group of monster hunters, and every session you hunt down a different monster, right? And I do this special series where the mysteries are all inspired by horror films of the 1980s. And so we did a two-session mystery called Huge Problems in Little Shanghai, which I wrote, and it's inspired by, obviously, Big Trouble in Little China. And then another one called The Dream, which is inspired by the awful but also amazing movie The Stuff, which is about killer ice cream. So have you seen The Stuff?
No, but it sounds great.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's basically like – it's like this ice cream that's also this sentient alien being – but it's also like just kind of a gross sex joke too, you know? So like it's all those things.
Did you talk about The Stuff on one of your Fear of a Black Dragons? Because I feel like I remember someone talking about it recently.
Maybe. Yeah, possibly. I'm not sure. Yeah, there's a good chance of it, I guess. But
Or everyone's talking about it on podcasts. Yeah, I don't know.
It was just a serendipitous thing for this 40-year-old movie, The Stuff. 35-year-old movie. And then I finally played Cheat Your Own Adventure, which is one of my absolute favorite games in the world. It is a very, very rules-light story game that emulates the experience of reading a choose your own adventure book, except it's called Cheat Your Own Adventure because basically you, every time you get a bad outcome and end up dying, you get to cheat and go back and do it again. So,
which is what everyone did anyway, right?
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Or was that just me? I mean,
no, I did. I always had my thumb on the page always.
So. Awesome. Operation Unfathomable. I actually had Jason Schultes and Jez Gordon on my show not too long ago talking about. I don't know if that's one that you listen to, but
it is.
Yep. Okay. They are they're great. Schultes is awesome anyway. I've always been a big fan. And I like all the Hydra Cooperative guys. So that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, they're doing super cool stuff. I'm finding myself super inspired by Hydra Cooperative lately. Game designer Kira McGrand put out this one of those little hashtag things in April, the hashtag April TTRPG day or something like that, hashtag where every day you answered a little question. And one of the questions was like, what's your big inspiration right now? And I listed a bunch of things, but also I listed Hydra Cooperative because like their books are they just feel really fresh to me. I like the aesthetic of those books, and I like the basic vibe of what they do. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of those guys, and they're super, super fun guys just to be around, when you get the opportunity to see them in person. So you live in that area. Do you ever go to North Texas or no?
I do. Yeah, I'm from North Texas, actually, but I don't live there currently. But I'm originally from the Dallas area. So I have been to the con at UNT. I've been to that. That was a long time ago, though. I wouldn't say I'm super keyed into that scene there, just because I didn't get into role-playing games until after I'd kind of moved away. But
well, Hyder Cooperative always has a booth there, and they're super fun to game with. And I go, so man, we'd have a blast.
Yeah, I mean, it's not far. I mean, where I'm at right now, it's like less than 2 hours. So yeah,
stop in one day. All right, so. The last segment of this introduction, I call Everything About You. I don't know if you're familiar with the Ugly Kid Joe song. No?
No.
Oh, nice. All right. You should Google that later. it's an 80s song about a band that's really, I hate everything about you is what the song is. But
okay.
I usually try to say something to the people, the listeners, that they don't know anything about me. Just an opportunity maybe to get a little tidbit to let people, because I never did an introduction. Oh, my cat is hitting my mic. I never did an introduction about what I was trying to do or who I was. And so I've just been feeding it episode by episode through this small little segment. All right. So do you want to go first? Do you want me to?
I go first. I am a super fan of the TV show RuPaul's Drag Race. I have seen every episode multiple times. I live on the Reddit of RuPaul's Drag Race. I love it. I live for it. I go to see the contestants and the performers whenever they're at clubs like nearby. I go to DragCon. I love it. I am a massive, massive Drag Race fan. So I can tell you everything about RuPaul's Drag Race.
Awesome. All right. That's cool, because I know nothing whatsoever about it. We'll have to talk about it at North Texas.
It is a reality TV competition where drag queens compete to be crowned America's next drag superstar.
Oh, nice. All right. So as the last few episodes of this show, it seems like my guests have been topping me on everything about you. I have to get more interesting. So I asked my wife today before we record, I'm like, hey, I need an everything about you. Hey, you should tell everyone you collect beer koozies. Okay. So I do. But I actually quit drinking in January this year, and I haven't drank for 4 months. So now I have this massive collection of beer koozies, and people keep giving them to me. They're like, oh, hey, man, like I do. I'm a salesman. And so when I go to people's places or whatever, they're like, hey, here's another beer koozie. Hey, I know you collect these beer koozies. I got one. And I'm like, hey, thanks. But so I have these massive boxes of beer koozies. So
you have to find something you can do with them that doesn't involve drinking beer, right? That's what you have to do.
Maybe they would make birthday hats or something. I could
make dice bags.
That would be cool. That's even better, actually. All right. So if you see me at North Texas with a beer koozie dice bag, you know it was Jason Cordova's fault. All right. So we'll get to the main topic, which is just basically me and you, the pod couple, talking. We kind of went over what the gauntlet is. I don't think we need to talk about that anymore. But the fear of a black dragon. It's a pretty interesting name for a podcast, don't you think?
It is an interesting name. Do you want to know the etymology of the name? Is that interesting?
I do. Yeah, let's talk about it.
So Fear of a Black Dragon, I should say, is I consider it to be an OSR podcast on our network that is hosted. It's a production of three people. Myself, my co-host, Tom McGrenery, and his beautiful English accent. Four people, really, if we include his beautiful English accent. and our producer, Paul Edson. What we do is we take an old school module or adventure book, old school module or setting book, and we evaluate it through these three different segments on the show. The three different segments are the basic crawl, the expert delve, and the companion adventures. Did you see what we did there?
Mm-hmm. I sure did. You missed the Masters and Immortals, though. I mean, we'd have.
I know. Yeah, we could have kept going. I know. Maybe there'll be. I don't know. Maybe we'll do a Patreon bonus someday. So, in the basic crawl, we basically go through. We highlight each different part of the book. So we start at the beginning and we just kind of go over like what is in the book from front to cover. And then we do a little review of it. Essentially, we talk about things we liked. We talk about questions we had about the module. We never say things we don't like because we're always super sunny and positive in the Gauntlet. So we say questions we had about the module. We do the chained lightning round, which is like a really fast back and forth between Tom and I of like just little encounters, monsters, tidbits from the module we thought were cool. So that's the basic crawl. During the expert delve, that's the segment that really makes the show what it is, I think. We look at a topic inspired by the book. And that topic is often different ways of like approaching the material, usually through the lens of an indie gamer or a story gamer. But also we sometimes do like gameplay discussions, like technique discussions. We sometimes talk about social or historical issues connected to the module, that kind of thing. So for example, for the last one, when we did Yunsuan, we talked about like, is this Orientalism? Right? We did that kind of thing. But mostly we do like we talk about gameplay and stuff in the middle section in the expert delve. And then for companion adventures, we talk about film, music, book recommendations, things like that, other media that we find inspiring.
Yeah, that's I like that expert part. Like I just listened to the one on Operation Unfathomable, obviously. And you were talking about performative GMing is what you call it, and using that to highlight Schultes's interesting characters and why you may want to, or, and I thought that was pretty cool. I agree with you. There's probably not that many people that do it. I've never had a name for it before, so I appreciate that. I like that group out of the story gamer group, or those people where they always seem to be analyzing things differently than I ever did when I was gaming. And so you guys come up with interesting names and theories. And I mean, the whole idea of the Forge was that right, specifically right. Is breaking games down and talking about why people play them and why, how other ways to create better games. So I think that is pretty cool. So do you think it's an OSR podcast?
I do. Yeah, I do. Yeah. I know you don't, but I do. And I'll ask you why you don't. I'll be curious to hear what you have to say, but I do. And I'll say why. So
all right, good.
Your listeners should know that Tom and I don't play OSR systems. I couldn't tell you anything about BX or Lamentations, a little bit of Lamentations. I can tell you a little bit about DCC, but not Swords and Wizardry or Labyrinth Lord or any of the others. We just don't play them. We play mostly World of Dungeons for purposes of preparing for the show. That's something I should mention. We don't cover any book unless one of us has played through it, right? One of us has not played the material. We do not do that book. So that's kind of our a standard we set for ourselves. But we use World of Dungeons to go through the material. And so because we don't play OSR systems and don't really live, we don't even like live in the sort of OSR community. Like neither of us frequent OSR boards or anything like that, right? But I consider it an OSR podcast right. Because I think, from my vantage point, what I think is super interesting about the OSR, and I think right now at this moment in time, the OSR is considerably more interesting than what Story Games is doing. What I find super interesting about the OSR is the modules, is the aesthetic, is the just the really like wild, different material that kind of challenges D&D orthodoxy, right? Like that's what I think is exciting about the OSR. Mm-hmm. I buy and read every Lamentations book from front to cover because I love them. I think they're fabulous texts, right? And so because I consider that to be such an important part of the OSR, I think the fact that we spend so much time on that material and the fact that we do play it as well, I think that counts.
Well, I think that you're part of the OSR just by playing that stuff. I'm not going to say who is or who isn't. The last thing I would ever want to be is a gatekeeper of what people are. And so when I say your show isn't an OSR podcast, you cover OSR material, but it's always through the lens of story games. So, and then mostly it's a joke. And I try to make it obvious that I'm mostly joking with you whenever
I know.
And who cares, really? I mean, a lot of people would say that the OSR isn't even a community at all. So they would just say it's a bunch of people playing games. And most of the product that you cover, the Yunsuan and the Hydra Cooperative and the Lamentation stuff, is mostly more considered the DIY aspect of the OSR.
Sure.
In the last 2 or 3 years, it's been growing farther and farther apart, I think, just because maybe some of it is the political spectrum of the country itself. People are, you either have to be on one side or the other. You can't just do everything and it can't be okay. I think that's part of it.
Everything has to be partisan.
Yes, exactly. It's like, we got to draw a line in the sand now. And if you cross, you have problems. But I actually said that to Chris a while ago on a Chris Sneezak is who I'm talking to, who you're familiar with from MMP. I said something like, hey, man, this Fear of a Black Dragon, I like it, but I don't think it's an OSR podcast. And he's like, well, you know, I don't really know. I'm not really in the OSR either. So, and he's like, but don't say anything to him because I like those guys. I don't want to get in some argument with them. I'm like, I don't care. They're not going to care.
So we should say that, like, I mean, like, sort of like publicly, no one cared. But when you, it was like on RG Plus or something, you said something like that, like, I love your podcast, but I don't consider you an OSR podcast. Like, 10 people in our Slack were like, WTF, like, who's that guy think he is? And Rich Rogers and I were like, it's cool. Like, don't worry about it. It's a big deal. You know? We have very, very, loyal defenders in our community. So,
that's good. And I was pretty sure after I was on GauntletCon and I talked with Rich sometimes, which that whole thing was a super, for me, I didn't really know anything about any of it. And I just saw it in passing. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm interested in online cons. And you guys did such a great job of it. And your Slack is cool. And the community was great. And the number of people on there that said they knew what my podcast was and knew who I was, it was pretty humbling to me, actually. I was like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, when I can't remember who told me that you were coming on. It was either Rich or Kate. But when I heard, I was like, oh, yeah, cool. I was like, from Hobbs and Friends, that's awesome. You know, like, yeah. I mean, I think you probably have more of a fan base and listenership than you give yourself credit for, right?
I guess. I don't know.
There's a huge amount of cross-pollination, I find, and particularly between MMP shows and our shows, right?
Yes.
Like, those people are fans of both, usually. So,
I'm happy with that. And that's a big reason why I wanted to go with Chris. I didn't want to have to edit the show. He said he would do it. And all I really have to do is talk to you, people like you, and have fun, you know? And so it's pretty awesome. I love it. So, I mean, I have a ton of stuff here, but we only have about 6 minutes left. Is there anything on here that you would like to talk about for 6 minutes? Do you care? Or?
Oh, the horseshoe spectrum of gamers. I like that one. That's pretty good.
I thought that was interesting. I don't remember who put that on the Gauntlet. I follow, you know, your community. So
I remember that. So they, I don't remember who it was either, but they basically were saying that,
your OSR podcast is better than actual OSR podcasts. That's where that came from.
Yeah. Someone was saying something like that. But I think the comment that somebody else said was that, like, indie games and story games,
at the far ends of the spectrum were closer to each other than people would think.
Yeah, they're on the ends of a horseshoe-shaped magnet, and so they're closer to each other than that big traditional space in the middle, right? And I thought that was pretty – I think I agree. What do you think?
I like the imagery of the idea, and this is something that I talked to Chris about quite a bit because he's closer to where you are. You know, he plays Dungeon World, not World of Dungeons, but
– But he plays a lot of D&D too, though, yeah?
Oh, yeah, 5th edition. Yeah, that's true. We say that – in reality, story gamers and specifically OSR gamers, not necessarily 5e, are they're kind of doing very similar things through a different spectrum, but they get to the same place.
I think that's right. Yeah, I agree with that.
That's why people would say Dungeon World feels like an OSR game, because they're trying to emulate that aesthetic or whatever that goes with it. And that makes sense to me that they would. And I mean, a lot of the stuff that I've read in Dungeon World is similar to the things that I've been doing most of the time, but they've really done a good job of maybe explaining how you do it. You didn't have to play for 10 years or have a DM for 10 years before you figured that stuff out. He's kind of explaining the process of creating settings and the fronts and the way of doing campaign, which I think is awesome. And they don't really do in OSR games at all. Like you say, now it's mostly interesting writing and a lot of creativity trying to push that envelope of what a D&D type game could be, really, is what I think the DIY is doing.
Yeah. And yet I do think that they are, I think they're more similar than they are different. I mean, to me, the major differences, the only differences that are really worth even drawing a bright line around, I guess, is that OSR, DIY, you know, retro clones, all that is kind of focused on fantasy gaming, whereas like story games and indie games, and we should probably define those a little bit. When I say story games and indie games, I kind of mean the same thing. And I mean games that came out of the Forge mm-hmm. diaspora or things like Powered by the Apocalypse games. That is to say games that are based off Vincent Baker's Apocalypse World or Vincent M. McKay Baker's Apocalypse mm-hmm. World. And so I think they're all a lot more similar than they are different. And the reason why I say that is because, oh, well, sorry. The indie story games, the major difference I think is they just cover lots of different like themes and settings, right? Like,
and they're more focused.
Yeah, they're hyper focused. Like they usually like that game I mentioned earlier, My Life with Master, it's designed to do a very, very specific thing. And it does that thing mm-hmm. every time you play it. And what it is it tells a story of an Igor like servant of a Dr. Frankenstein like master and their sort of emotionally abusive relationship. And at the end, it always ends the same way. The servant character overthrows the master, right? Like it's hyper focused, right?
And a lot of those games are like that. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No. But I think like, you know, those are some big differences, but at the end of the day, I think they're both a reaction to the bloat that was happening in the aughts when it comes to like big mainstream role-playing games, right?
Yeah.
I think there was a big I wasn't around during that time. I wasn't really playing RPGs at that time, but my impression, my reading of it is that there was a response to push back against the supplement bloat, the
continually selling different editions to try and make you buy it, spend more money.
Feature creep, the multiple editions, yeah, all that. Like I think there was just and I think there was a desire to get to good story in a simpler way. And I think they took two different mm-hmm. paths there, but I think that there's a lot of identifiable spirit between the two.
What do you think about the idea that the authoritative voice, like you had too many people that played with bad GMs and really didn't let players give their authoritative voice. So they made story games, which changed that mm-hmm. narrative authority more to players as opposed to just the GM. That's kind of one of the things that I think is a different.
That is a hallmark of indie games for sure. In a lot of cases you have games that have no GM, right? Mm-hmm. Or I like to say they're not GM less, they're GM full.
Everybody's a GM, right? I like it.
Right. So that is a thing. But also on the flip side of that, probably one of the most popular things going in the indie space right now are games like Blades in the Dark, games like Apocalypse World, and its many, many different, you know, hacks. Mm-hmm. And those have a more traditional GM mm-hmm. player setup, right? Now, baked within those rule sets are lots of opportunities for the players to develop the fiction and kind of build out the world a little bit. But they are still pretty... they're still pretty close to the traditional setup, right? So there's a variety, right, for sure.
All right, man. So we're almost out of time. Let me roll through some of this outro stuff. I always like to show appreciation for my patrons. This time I'm going to shout out Jared Rasher, Ben Lawrence, and Jason Vines. Thanks, guys, for your patronage. It's very, very appreciated. It's part of the reason I can tell my wife, hey, get out of the kitchen. It's time for me to record. And she feels like it's worthwhile. What? You got another $20? Good job. All right. It's worth it now. No. Seriously, though, you have a patron. Do you want to say what it is? Or you could also put it in the links at the bottom of the show notes because I publish these as well.
Yeah, sure. The Gauntlet. We have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/gauntlet. If anybody checks our stuff out and you like it, we would love your support.
Yeah, they're very inclusive, and that's why one of the reasons I love them. So mine is patreon.com/OSRNHobbs. So if anyone wanted to talk about your gauntlet there, Jason, how would they get a hold of you?
The best way to reach me is probably on Twitter. The Gauntlet Twitter and my personal Twitter are both at GauntletRPG, so you can get both community questions and questions about to me specifically. We're also on G+, in the community section of G+, just search for the Gauntlet.
And they have a massive community. There's like, how many people are in that thing? 1,700 or something?
I think we're up to almost 1,900.
1,900. Nice.
Yeah, we've been just very, very slowly building it up from when I found it, when it was like 13.
So, nice. Yeah,
we've gradually been building it up.
I always mention how many people are in the community. We just broke 600 yesterday. Nice. So we have 601 right now. And I don't I actually got rid of a bot yesterday because they put up some crazy thing. But
when we got to 666, I wanted to just shut it down completely. I didn't want anyone else. I like really thought about it too. I was like, let's move.
I'll do that when it gets to 665, because that was the name of my old paintball team, Almost Evil.
Nice. So. That's good. Okay, that's good.
So if you want to reach me on the Twitter at Hobbs Indeed, or the show has a Twitter at OSR and Hobbs. I try to keep them separate, but I'm terrible at it. We actually had this conversation on Twitter, I think. Heck, you got any last words, or we want to wrap this up?
I don't think so. Thanks for having me on. I really hope that people, check out our stuff. If you check out Fear of Black Dragon, it's, it may be an OSR podcast or it may not.
Well, I think a lot of OSR people do check out, because I see them talk about it and they get excited when you guys do one of their products.
Oh, so, cool. Good. Yeah, that's good to know.
Yeah, keep it going. I've seen it many times, and I've even told people, hey, do you see what these crazy guys said? I'm just kidding. So if people like the show, we were thinking about maybe doing a series too. I mean, if Jason, unless he was just being nice and said that he had fun, I don't know, but we'll see if we can get him on again.
Yeah, I'll come on again. Absolutely. Yeah, I'd love to.
All right. It was great, man. Thanks. So I guess I'll finish this off. Hobbs and Friends of the OSR is part of the Misdirected Mark Network, the media arm of Encoded Design.